And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
It's October. Time to put on a big sweater, sip a hot drink. But before you get too cozy, you gotta
head on down to Costco to buy a giant punk rock skeleton. The economy is literally tanking, but you just spent $150 on a life-size ornament that stands on your lawn.
Good morning, sweet world, and welcome to the No Dunks Podcast on the Athletic Network. It's Monday, October 23rd, 2023. I'm J.E. Skeets here in the Classic Factory. To my left, it's the bearded one, my top shot hot boy, Trey Kirby.
Heyo!
Heyo! And over yonder, the man making the magic happen, super producer J.D.
Hello.
There he is. Here we are. Shout out to the stream team joining us live right now on YouTube. Smash that like button and make sure you subscribe. The NBA season starts tomorrow night. And hey, never miss a hoop story that matters. The Athletic has you covered with relentless reporting on every dime, basket, dunk this season. All of it. Charges, alley-oops.
Flops, probably.
Flops. Indeed. Yeah. We'll have a whole article on that. Subscribe now for a special deal. Just $1.99 a month for 12 months. Go to theathletic.com/nodunks to take advantage of that. All right, on today's pod, we got a lot. We're going to discuss Andre Iguodala's retirement that happened sort of right while we were doing Friday's show.
Right.
We got to discuss Steven Adams' season-ending knee surgery and how that affects the Grizzlies. We had a few last-minute contract extensions. Some guys got paid. But first, we got a guest here on a Monday. He's the producer and co-host of the Raptors show and is the author of the brand new book, Prehistoric, The Audacious and Improbable Origin Story of the Toronto Raptors. It's Alex Wong. Alex, what's up, man?
Hey, what's up, guys? Thanks for having me on. You know, book is coming out this week, but this is, like I told you guys off air, this is the only podcast I'm excited to be on.
Oh, okay.
Just kidding to everyone who's booked me.
Yeah, you must have a busy week lined up here. Not only just the start of the season, obviously you guys will have the Raptor show, but yeah, you'll be doing all the press here for this incredible new book.
Yeah, it's been super fun, you know, obviously talking to you guys, talking to everyone. This project I finished earlier this year, but to be able to now finally get feedback from everybody and hear what people, what tidbits and stories from the book that people never knew about, or things from the first year that people have forgotten about, all that stuff is super fun. Like, I think this is the part of finishing a book and writing a book that is the most fun for me, is to be able to finally interact with someone. Because when you write a book, you hold on to it yourself for like 2 years, 3 years as you're working through it, and you finally release it out to the world. It's a beautiful thing, you know, guys?
How long were you thinking about writing this book? You've obviously written some other books. We loved Cover Story. But how long was this one in the works, Alex?
Yeah, I think even before I pitched Cover Story, and I would say like, even before the Raptors won the championship, I've always thought about wanting to write a story about the origin story of the Raptors, because when they started in 95, like, I was just an 11-year-old kid, had just come to Canada from Hong Kong for 3 years, and basketball really changed my life here in terms of, you know, getting to know a different community here, making friends as a kid, as an immigrant. So honestly, going way back, ever since I've gotten into this, you know, writing space, found out that Skeets and I lived in the same condo unit in Toronto. Like, I've thought about that since way back, but it wasn't until when the Raptors won the championship that I thought maybe there would be an appetite for it. And it really made me realize that it's been 25, 30 years now, and it's time to revisit that for the younger generation who weren't even, some of them weren't even born during 95. And for people like myself too, who only know kind of little bits and pieces about the early years.
I devoured this book over the weekend. Like, once I started going, I could not put it down. It felt like you wrote this book just for me. Screw everybody else. Like, as a diehard Raptors fan around that age when they got the team where I was just really getting into basketball. But I love how you laid this book out too, Alex. Like, you take us through the entire, obviously the creation of the team and all that went into that, but then the entire season of that first year Raptors team, the expansion team. But then within it, you like have these sort of chapters, if you want to call them, or at least stories about a lot of the players that you obviously got some one-on-one time with. So I loved, like, you know, there's a part dedicated to A.C. Earl, and there's a part dedicated to Tracy Murray. I thought that was so cool, like, through the line of the season. So well done on that. Did you have a favorite, you know, Raptors player or even someone within the organization that you got to talk to for this book?
Yeah, I would actually say A.C. Earl. You know, I'm sure Raptors fans will remember A.C., as a cult figure. You know, he was drafted by Boston a few years earlier before the Raptors took him in the expansion draft in the first round. Didn't really pan out. Came here to Toronto, and not everybody, but Raptors fans will remember he scored 40 points mm-hmm. against the Boston Celtics, a career high in that first season. And that's one of the stories I dove into. I love talking to AC because AC was just such an eccentric guy. Like, he, you know, built his own music studio back home in Iowa. Like, he helped members of the Wu-Tang come to Scarborough during that first season to organize a concert. And he was just a prankster and a jokester in the locker room. And just talking to everybody that I was able to track down on that first year team and talking to AC himself, guys were so excited to talk about AC Earl. And I know you guys cover the NBA so in depth, like, you guys know, like, there's just certain guys that all, everybody who's ever played with, they all love. And AC was one of those guys. So it was super cool to tell his story. He actually came to town over the summer for a Raptors reunion event too. So I was able to connect with him as well. So that's a super cool part. And I clocked that he was still wearing a Celtics backpack. So I think he's got a Celtics backpack from 93.
Throwback.
Yeah.
You think we need to do people forget AC Earl was a problem kind of YouTube short or something?
Yeah,
like
people
that?
People forget he was a problem in that one game that was not on local TV and nobody saw, but he was a problem.
Do you have a favorite, like, little anecdote from the book that you learned that you were like, wow, that happened either with, you know, amongst teammates or something behind the scenes? Like, do you have a favorite part?
Yeah, my favorite part actually diving into the story of when the Raptors as an expansion team beat Michael Jordan and the Bulls team that would go on to win 72 games that year in the championship. So much, you know, Tracy Murray, another member of that first year team and another favorite that I talked to in this book, he had always told me over the years whenever we chatted, he was like, man, you know, those guys were hungover that day. It was an afternoon game. I came out for shoot around and like nobody was there. And I went to Ron Harper, who was my boy. And Ron Harper was like, man, last night was a tough night. So I just wanted to dive into it. I mean, obviously, this is not the first time ever that NBA players have partied before a game, especially in Toronto. But I was actually able to track down the club promoter named Eddie Williams, who organized a party on King West and got Michael Jordan to put his name and face on the flyer. So it was actually not just any party. It was the biggest party of that season for the Raptors. And Jordan came through, apparently, according to sources. Shouts to Woj and Shams. Jordan showed up at like 1 in the morning. Tracy said he left at 2. Ron Harper says that they didn't get back to the hotel till 8. They played at 3 p.m. the next day. So that was a fun little story to just throw in there. But as I was writing, I was like, damn, I guess this doesn't really matter because MJ scored 38 points and they almost beat him at the buzzer anyway.
Yeah. He actually hit the shot at the buzzer. It was just a second too late or like half a second too late. I'm glad you brought that part up. I didn't know this story. I got to be honest. I thought I knew absolutely everything about the Raptors. Of course, we know when Mighty Mouse, Damon Stoudemire, and the Raps beat the 72-10 Bulls. Like, that was their championship that season. But I did not know there was a huge rager the night before. And now it makes a little more sense why they maybe didn't take it all so serious.
Yeah, that was actually my least favorite part.
Yeah.
But it answers a whole bunch of questions that we probably would have been able to guess the answer to. One of my favorite parts in the book, though, Alex, is when you talk to Samuel L. Jackson, and he basically says that he educated Raptors fans about how to trash talk in basketball. What was it like talking to Samuel L. Jackson?
Yeah, it's the funniest thing. And shout out to my friend Elaine Kwan, who's in the book as well. She worked in the community relations department in the first year. And one of the, I'll answer the same way, but I just want to quickly say one of the coolest things when I mentioned Elaine and these people, like, they all still keep in touch. Like, all these first year people who worked in the organization, like, Elaine talks to Damon and Tracy all the time. There's just like this really special bond, and that people, I think, will find out when they read the book, of just people coming together to build this expansion team. But Elaine was able to set me up with Samuel Jackson. They've always kept in touch. I believe he was shooting some kind of Marvel thing in Atlanta at the time. So I got in touch with his people. And one of the funniest things, I mean, it was a joy to talk to Samuel just about, you know, Toronto, the Raptors, you know, the Raptor duffel bag being in Jackie Brown. It was funniest thing. It's like, I get on the phone. I'm like, I'm a big fan, Sam. He's like, I've heard that before. Just get to the questions.
No small talk, man.
No, I like completely melted down. I was like, why am I telling Samuel L. Jackson I'm a big fan? But like the funniest thing too was like, they're obviously being an A-list celebrity. Like their handlers, managers was like, you know, you only get a little bit of time. So I had the world's tiniest Google Calendar invite. It was 2 to 2:05 p.m. It was a 5-minute meeting. I was like, damn, man. I'm also not going to take this too seriously, but I feel personally attacked at the moment at this meeting invite.
But he did, like Trey said, had a lot to say about going to those early games and loving basketball and becoming a Raptors fan. But yeah, the idea that he had to teach, you know, that hockey-loving crowd, like, the rules and what the etiquette of what you can do, I guess, at a basketball game. He was pretty proud of that and telling you, hey, I taught them how to heckle.
Yeah, no, it was, and that's like a running theme that comes out throughout the book. Like, I forgot that before the start of that first season, Brendan Malone, the head coach, rest in peace, passed away recently. Yeah. Like, had to sit the media down and actually just teach them the X's and O's, because aside from Doug Smith of the Toronto Star, who's still covering basketball today, and a few other people in that space, Leo Routens, who's in the book, Paul Jones, I'm sure I'm forgetting people, but like a lot of people were covering basketball for the first time. Like, there was just a lot of education that was going on. Like, even on opening night that I covered, there's this, been this story that goes around, everybody remembers from opening night, that like the fans waved the thunder sticks when the Raptors were shooting free throws. and it turned out, I tracked down the guy who runs game ops, and he, I guess conveniently, 25, 30 years later, just blamed it on the volunteers in the arena. He's like, I told him to hand it out on the right side, but they went, but you know, this is something that I would do at work too, especially 30 years later if there was an incident. I would definitely pass the buck, but there was just an education process. And Leo Rounds was talking about how, like, Skeets, you might remember this, like on the broadcast, they would have like, you know, rounds on round ball. Like, they would just be teaching you like what the 3-second violation is, what illegal defense is. And you know what? At the time, that was very important because it was a hockey town and a lot of people didn't know basketball.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, this book is phenomenal. Let's pivot from the past, though, to the present here, Alex. Again, you co-host, you're on and produce the Raptor Show with Will Liu and Blake Murphy, who has been folded into the mix, I guess, permanently now, right?
Yeah. Blake's an addition to the team this year. And the bosses also came to us and was like, hey, I have some great news. You guys are going from 1 hour to 2 hour. And I was like, what's the great news? Anyways, just kidding, bosses. I love working. We're two to four PM
wow,
now
I didn't
every
know that.
Day. Catch us on podcasts, catch us on Sportsnet. Very excited. Yeah. We're also, you know, not to step in your territory, but because we're going to 2 hours, we are doing more like NBA coverage and stuff. So
okay.
We're excited about
all right,
that.
We're battling. Yeah. I thought you were going to say not to step into your territory. We added a white guy to the show.
Oh my God.
That's our corner, man.
So many things I want to say, but let's stay focused, boys. Yeah.
Well, let's get your thoughts on the Raptors here. Are there reasons to be optimistic about the 23-24 Raptors here? What's your feeling about this team?
Yeah, get Will on the line, man. Every time I'm pessimistic, he's like, what's wrong with you? So just get Will Liu on the line. No, I think, listen, last year, I think we can all agree, it was just not a fun season to be a part of. Mm-hmm. And I think it's pretty damning when the president of the team, Masai Ujiri, comes to the season-ending presser and said, to paraphrase, that he hated watching this team. It wasn't a fun team to watch. I think 41-41 plus the DeMar DeRozan game was a perfect encapsulation of what this team was. Like, they were just up and down all season, couldn't get any traction. So to even start from the optimistic side, it's that it honestly, one of the things is like, can it get any worse? Like, they've got a new coach in, they're playing a new style, they're going with a deeper bench this year, and I think just aesthetically, it's going to be more fun. Wins and losses, I'm sure we could get into. I don't know how much better they are year to year. Mm-hmm. But also, I will say too, like, and I don't think this is all on Fred. I just think there was too many players last year that needed touches on the team. So whether it was subtracting Fred or subtracting someone else, it just felt like they needed to subtract one guy who was a high volume shooter and a high usage player. And now you bring in Dennis Schroeder, who's going to be more of a playmaker. I just think the offense is going to spread out a little bit more. And, you know, preseason really doesn't count for anything. But even from watching in the preseason, talking to, you know, members of the team, sources, you know, everybody says that the vibes are better. So vibes are good, but I'm all about wins and losses as well.
One guy who will be touching the ball a lot this season is Scotty Barnes. The ball's been moving like crazy for the Raptors in the preseason, but I think Scotty's development is huge this season. Skeets, I'm sure you would agree. Alex, what are you expecting from Scotty Barnes in year three?
Yeah, I think I'm expecting more of what he brought in his first season than his second season. With development too under Darko Rajakovic, he has been very empowered, I think, you know, early on in training camp and in preseason. And sometimes we forget, like, not even just development is not linear. Like, these are really young kids, right? Like, they have a brush with success, a rookie of the year. They might come back expecting things to be easy and take a step back in year two. And sometimes these guys need a coach, you know, to empower them and need the team to let them know that, hey, we're going to put the ball in your hands. You know, we want you to go out there and do what you do. You know, I thought the Washington game, the preseason game on Friday, I'm sure everybody spent their Friday tuning into Raptors, Wizards. You know, Scotty was amazing. And I think one of the things I always ask for Scotty is just to have that energy and that consistency over four quarters. I know that's a lot to ask for over 82 games, but last year, I thought that was the biggest thing that was missing from him was just that consistent energy that was there. So I think if he brings that, like, you know, anything's on the table for Scotty.
And what do you, how many wins do you see the Raptors sort of finishing? I mean, 41 and 41, you said last year. Sounds like you think they're improved, maybe just on vibes alone and Scotty obviously improving and stuff like that. Is this like a 45 win team, flirting with 50? Where do you have them?
Yeah, so Sportsnet actually asked me to submit my official prediction. So, you know, appreciate you guys for making me work on the weekend as I picked the Clippers to win the championship.
I actually had the
Raptors. I put down, they asked me how many wins. I said 44. I think me, they profile to me as a team in that range. Like, I don't see the upside to the point on this roster where they can be 48 to 50 wins. Like, get in the conversation, I don't know, maybe in like the 4-5 range, you know, seeding in the East. Like, I feel like they're going to be kind of 5-6 fighting for the play-in. I think that's the best case scenario for this team. But I think to me, the wins are important, definitely. But I think Raptors fans will feel good coming out of this year if Scotty takes another step. And some of these young guys like Precious Achiuwa, even Christian Coloco, you know, throw the rookie Grady Dick in there too. Like, if they see a semblance of what that kind of next group of players is going to be for this team.
Do you think the Raptors are going to be competitive in the inaugural in-season tournament this season?
Yeah, as I tell people, it's still a Tuesday against Orlando just because they branded differently. You know, don't let corporate America fool you. You know? And listen, this isn't even no offense to Orlando. They're actually a fun team this year. So yeah. Maybe I need to pick another team to kind of slam on. So, yeah, we'll see. Like, if Pascal Siakam's, you know, a little bit under the weather on a Tuesday against Orlando, is he going to play just because there's an in-season tournament logo next on the broadcast? I don't know. I'm very anti-in-season tournament. Oh. Like, I saw Trey, you put out the logo last week. That has heavy, like, my boss is forcing me to play in this tournament energy. So I don't like it.
Yeah. They didn't even give it a name. It just called what it is, the in-season tournament.
I read something about that. They didn't know what else to call it. They're like, let's just not, you know, overcomplicate this. It's an in-season tournament.
They
let's
didn't.
Just call it that.
Yeah.
Alex, how do we feel about Grady Dick, the Raptors rookie, appearing in Drake's son's music video? Is this... you know, is this a good sign for things to come this year or, ooh, uh-oh?
Yeah, first of all, super jealousy anytime, you know, he's able to be this close with the global ambassador. Just some breaking news here on No Dunks, you know, not going to get into the specifics, but like was able to get a book, a signed copy of Prehistoric to the Boy last week.
Wow.
And was crushed. Was crushed because I've been waking up every day now checking his IG story, hoping he can bump up my royalty sales by posting it once in the background as he gambles on steak. Was crushed was crushed that he posted Rich Paul's book yesterday, which I'm super looking forward to reading.
That's right.
But I was like, oh my God, it's a book. But I was like, oh my God, it's not mine. So Drake, you still have time. Shouts to the boy. But yeah, no, that was super cool. You know, to see Adonis take over the entire OVO practice facility, and for Grady to make that cameo. And Will actually asked Grady about it at practice last week, and Grady seemed to get a kick out of it. I feel like this is like a rite of passage for every player that comes to Toronto. You got to stare at the camera and say, "We the North." And you also just have a random like run in with Drake. So like Grady Dick is already ahead of the curve.
Yeah, it's a weird cult we got going on up there for sure. The Drake cult.
Who is the best We the North sayer right now? Is it still Gary Trent Jr.?
Yeah, Gary's pretty good, but the all-time will always be when they first landed, I believe this was in Tampa, when Malachi Flynn and Jalen Harris were in a video together after being drafted and had to say, "We the North." If anybody can pull that up, it's amazing, because I've never seen two NBA players look like they were being held hostage. like they were just like, "Hey, guys, but we the North." Like, there was no excitement behind it, nothing.
Today is NBA Jersey Day. The NBA told us last week it would be celebrated today on Monday, the day before the start of the season. You are a man that, I mean, you got a lot of great vintage finds. What's your favorite NBA jersey that you own?
Favorite one I own is actually a vintage champion Houston Rockets Robert Horry.
Okay.
So was a huge fan of just, I don't know if you guys were like this growing up. Like, I just like a particular type of player. So for me growing up, I just love either power forwards, like 90s power forwards. Like, I remember I used to track, I spent so much time tracking down a Tyrone Hill, like, starting lineup figure that it was, like, unhealthy.
And I just also loved it. Like, what was Tyrone Hill possibly doing as an action figure? Setting a screen?
Honestly, no comment. But, like, Robert Horry was, like, I love those role players. Like, role players who would become, like, superhero types in the playoffs. And Horry is obviously well known for so many moments with the Lakers and the Spurs, but like a little bit older fans like myself remember him on Houston too, when he was just coming up and the Rockets won those two championships. So for me to track down that Robert Horry jersey was a blessing. Like, I've passed on a lot of my jerseys now to friends, to my nephews as well, because they're starting to get into basketball, but the Horry one stays with me.
Shout out to Henry and Owen, who this book
people knowing them by name is crazy.
Yeah. Well, I see them all over your Instagram account.
Yeah,
like, they feel like my nephews at this point.
I'm like, I tell
my nephews, man, I'm not hanging out with you if there's no content. Like, there has to be content. We're getting content.
Yeah. Well, young kids tend to like these City Edition jerseys that we've seen popping up. There's obviously a whole new crop of 30 of them for this season, Alex. Not great reviews, though, I would say, for the majority of these City Edition jerseys. What do you think about this entire program where every team's getting some kind of new look every year?
Yeah, shout out to all my close friends at Nike. Please continue to seed me. But what is going on with this jersey situation, guys? Like, is this my new theory is that there's a designer at Nike that's just trolling the NBA. Oh, like, wow. Like, if you look at it from that perspective, then I think some of these designs make sense. And I think when you guys talk about the City Edition program, like, I think you guys will agree there's just too many of them. There's too many of them. Like, growing up, when I watched the Knicks, when I watched the Pacers, when I watched the Magic, when I watched the Bulls, I associated them with maybe one, two, maybe three max jerseys, like, over the course of an entire decade. Like, when I think about Reggie Miller, when I think about Patrick Ewing, when I think about MJ, I only see them in, like, two, three jerseys, right? Mm-hmm. And now it's like, when I think about Giannis, he's in, like, nine different jerseys, and five of them say Cream City. So it's, you know, I don't know how good that is. And it's like, I was looking at all the jerseys before coming on today, like, all the best throwback jerseys or the City Edition jerseys are the ones where they just throw it back 100%.
Right.
Like the Orlando Magic. I think the Charlotte Hornets are throwing it back too, to kind of that Baron Davis era. So it's very scary to me. Like, you know, I think all of us love jerseys. I love how I'm saying it's scary to me. Like, is this something really concerning to me, guys? We need to take a second to think about this. But it's like, where are the new cool jersey designs going to come from? Like these kids, like, I used to go to the mall and, like, just, you know, beg my parents to, like, please buy me a single jersey.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Are kids today, like, having that same feeling? Are they still going to malls? Guys, this is a real serious situation, man.
It's scary out there. You might wake up one day and see the scariest jersey you've ever seen.
Yeah, we were looking at them before we went live here, and I think we'll do a segment on tomorrow's No Dunks, maybe going through all of them. Most of them are, you know, most of them are official. Some are still leaked, but of these new City Edition jerseys, there's like four that I'm like, okay, that's not bad. Yeah. And another 26 where you're right, Alex, it looks like somebody's either trying to troll the NBA or mailing it in. Like, look at this Nuggets jersey. Hey, do you like numbers?
No. Is this for the altitude? Like the
mile? Yes, that's a mile.
Yeah, man.
Oh, my God. You know the worst one is the one that says Heat Culture.
Oh, yeah. That's pretty brutal.
It's like they, why don't you guys just slap Live, Laugh, Love on it at this point? Who goes, yo, this is our team slogan, or this is what we're known by, and this is going to be the jersey. What are we doing?
It's almost amazing that the Raptors have somehow not come out with a We the North jersey
yet. That's a great point.
Like, it's crazy.
Yeah, please, Skeet, stop. Don't give them any ideas. Like, yeah. This is going to get produced tomorrow. Yeah, stop it.
That's true. Well, you said you're talking about the Raptors, obviously, on the Raptor show, but you're expanding it. It's 2 hours now, so a lot more NBA talk. What's one popular prediction, Alex, that you've seen that you think's completely wrong heading into this new season, or that you just take the opposite look at?
Yeah, I would say I feel like popular opinion is that the Sixers are going to be a really good regular season team. They're going to compete again and be a fringe championship contender. And my hot take has been that the Sixers are going to be in the play-in this year. You know, why are we just assuming, and it's just reported again that James Harden still hasn't come back to practice and joined the team this week. Like, why are we just assuming just because they were able to weather the Ben Simmons situation that, you know, they're able to deal with this James Harden situation? And like, I haven't seen a single trade package from the Clippers that would make me feel good about the return and what that would look like for the team. I think sometimes teams simply run their course. Like, all due respect to the MVP, Joel Embiid. Like, I look around, like, outside of Tyrese Maxey, are there a lot of players on this team that you're super excited about? Mm. And I just think there's a lot of, like, season from hell potential for this team. And I think, you know, we don't wish injuries on anyone, but it's like, you look at this roster, like, of the top teams, of the top, like, four or five teams in the East, this is the one team that can least afford an injury to their best player. Like, if Joel Embiid goes down, it reminds me of those kind of Cleveland, LeBron, you know, early career situations where you look at the rest of the roster and you're like, wow, the rest of the roster is like a 25-win team. So I just think there's a lot of factors at play right now. And at the top of it is the fact that their second best player is causing all this chaos. And just because it's been chaotic in Philly for a whole decade, we just assume that's okay. Like, this is not normal. Guys, this is another serious situation we need to look at.
And what's the over under on the number of games it takes for Nick Nurse to start calling out some 76ers players in the media?
You mean on his burner account? Have you heard about this story that's been circulating, guys?
I hear you always mention it. So fill me
in. There's a potential burner account. That is maybe direct. I don't think it's directly Nick Nurse, but maybe someone related to him who has been replying to everything that's Nick Nurse related, who has been saying that the Raptors only had three good players last season, etc. So,
wow.
You guys gotta look into that. I'm gonna send Jerome, aka Black Dragon Roll, all the information after. But yeah, I don't know the public callouts. I mean, Chris Boucher was on our show last week, and we asked him about it, and he said, "Hey, I just got used to it at some point." And I'm like, that's not a healthy answer.
No.
When you're just used to your coach calling you out. So I don't know. I think it's gonna maybe 2 weeks. I think I'm gonna give it 2 weeks. I think, you know, DeAnthony Melton, Paul Reed, you know, one of these role guys, you better be careful. That call out is coming.
Yeah, you're right. It won't be Nurse really calling out Joel Embiid or Maxey. It'll be one of those guys trying to, like, really crack the rotation or get an opportunity, and Nurse sees something he doesn't like and trying to coach him up through the media that way. I love it. I always forget that Nick Nurse is the coach of the Philadelphia 76ers. It is
that
weird.
Would be like a huge change if that was the only change. Saying bye to Doc Rivers, Nick Nurse coming to town. Chris Boucher said he got used to getting called out. Did the players get used to their coach coming into the locker room with an acoustic guitar to strum along? You think that traveled to Philadelphia? I don't know how that goes over in a new locker room.
Yeah, we're going to see. I think that is a really interesting dynamic. You know, I think Nick, what we've learned from his tenure in Toronto is he's just a big personality, right? Like, he wants to have his imprint on the team. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. Nope. And listen, if I was promoted to head coach after, like, you know, toiling around in the G League as an assistant for so many years and won a championship in my first year, like, I'd be moving around like Nick Nurse too. You know, like, don't tell me what to do. I'm going to call out all the players. Like, I know what's good. So, like, but I do think it's going to be interesting because Nick Nurse has been known to be a great tactician in the playoffs, and this is exactly what the Sixers need. So I do wonder, like, do they have good enough of a roster to finally give a quote-unquote better head coach a chance to get them over the hump in the playoffs this season? I'm still very skeptical about just the overall team.
Well, to bring it back to Alex's new book, Prehistoric, it's available everywhere tomorrow. That's October 24th. I know some of you have already pre-ordered. I saw people tweeting at me, pre-ordered, check mark. So you got to love to see that, Alex. This book, though, again, phenomenal. If you are a Raptors fan or know a Raptors fan in your life, I think it's like the perfect like holiday gift with Christmas right around the corner. So go grab this. I absolutely loved it. One other favorite moment from this book, you writing about Vincenzo Esposito and Carlos Rogers getting into it, basically like fighting in practice and then having an epic one-on-one game. And I could have read 10 chapters about that.
Yeah, I love that. You know, at one point during the summer, I was only on WhatsApp chatting with two people, Vincenzo and my mom. And I don't know why, I just found that so funny that those were the two names on there. But yeah, Vincenzo was another guy that was super fun to talk to. He's coaching overseas now, and he had some great memories, including that one story you talked about, that Vincenzo wasn't playing a lot at the start of the season, but he was like going at everybody in practice. And I think Vincenzo is one of those guys who's got this like pretty like confident slash cocky attitude that really rubbed himself the wrong way on some of the guys. And you know, one of the times after practice, he just challenged Carlos Rogers to this one-on-one match. And everybody just like, all the players and coaches just like changed their clothes. And even Brendan Malone, who was like a very serious dude, was like, all right, I'm going to sit in the bleachers and watch how this unfolds. So it was like super fun. But Vincenzo told me like, oh, after that, like him and Carlos got really close. And, you know, Carlos would talk about going to visit in Italy and they really got to know each other. So all that stuff in that book, like there's just so many tidbits about just the relationships of the guys.
Yeah, it's really cool. All right, Alex, final thoughts here. Plug the book, plug the Raptor show, and tell people where they can follow your work.
Yeah, book is called Prehistoric. Go order it. Watch the Raptor show. Follow me on Twitter, Steven_LeBron. IG is at Steven LeBron. And you know, before I leave as well, I just want to give a quick shout out to Tass. I know I saw you guys post a photo with him. I've been talking to Jerome, aka Black Dragon Roll. I've just got to call him Jerome, man. I can't be calling him Black Dragon Roll.
This we is like the plugs for his handles as well.
This is a grown man. I respect you, Jerome. I love you, but like I hear that Tass is getting better. And, you know, I'm super glad to hear that. Tass, I don't know if you're watching or not, but, you know, I just want you to know that I'm thinking of you, Will and I, the whole crew as well. And I did hear Tass is trying to get back to the show soon. Tass, let me tell you, man, as someone who always tells people, take the longest time possible back to work, my brother. Take the longest route back to work if you have a chance to not work. So shouts to you, Tass. Shouts to you, Skeets, and Trey. I always appreciate you guys, and it's always fun. And I promise you, next time I write a book, I will bring a microphone, all right?
Oh, yeah. And hey, next time get me on the back of the book with the blurb. I sent a great one in.
Do I have 1 minute to talk about book blurbs?
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead. I was like, man, I wrote a killer blurb. This is getting on this book for sure. But no.
So here's the blurb from J.E. Skeets. Quote, when did you fall in love with basketball? It's a question I've often asked. Thankfully, my answer is to now just hand over a copy of Prehistoric, which perfectly captures the joy of having our own NBA team to root for as a young teen. The purple jerseys, the Sky Dome, Mighty Mouse. This is the ultimate trip down memory lane and a must read for any Canadian hoops head. Once again, Will Liu, you could say this on air every day, and it would really help my
That's
book.
That's pretty
sales.
Good, like, isn't it?
It was an amazing blurb. So here's what happened. So here's my whole strategy, because I'm a long-term thinker. When I was writing cover story, I was like, my next book is probably going to be a Raptors book. So I'm going to ask Trey to blurb cover story, right, which he did. Mm-hmm. And then I'm going to ask Skeets and Tass to blurb a Raptors-specific book. And that's what I did. I asked both of you. The problem is, so I sent out blurb requests to like 10 people, because usually you do that because we are notorious the most unreliable people, just like sports media people. And you're like, hey, please read my book. Please do a blurb. And you expect out of the 10 people, maybe you get answers from like five of them. And that's what you hope for, because mm-hmm. then you put like four or five blurbs in there. So what happened was all 10 people replied
wow.
within like the 2 week requirement. And then I told my publisher, I'm like, can I take a look at a back cover where all the blurbs are in there? And it just looked insane because they had to like squeeze everything in.
That's fair.
And then I was like, man, how do I do this like in a way that doesn't like, you know, mess everyone up or like gets anyone upset at me? And then I just decided to just go based on who sent it to me first. Oh. So like the first five people who sent it to me first. But your blurb is up on Amazon, on Indigo. It's everywhere, along with Tassus. And I just want you guys to know that I do super appreciate it. You know, I started going to therapy this year. My therapist told me to stop thinking in such extremes. Like for a time, I would be like, oh my God, Skeets and Taz hate me forever. I am the worst person. But I was able to overcome those thoughts and come on this podcast and give you guys a classic on Monday. So I really appreciate it.
You did indeed. I'm happy to know it made it onto the digital version of the book. All right, everybody, Alex Wong, go get Prehistoric. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, some NBA news. Don't go anywhere.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
I gotta get something off my chest. Nothing drives me crazier than sending a message to a group chat and getting no response. That's why I'm a big emoji responder. Love a hang loose hand or a salute, but man, it hurts when you send a message and get nothing back. Ouch! We all carry around different stressors, big and small. When we keep them bottled up, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. Therapy isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/NoDunks today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp.com/NoDunks. This episode of No Dunks is brought to you by BetterHelp.
Cha-ching! Nice.
Yeah.
We got to get you a soundboard again, AJD. Remember the soundboard days?
I do remember those days.
Yeah. Why don't we got to fire that up. Just, you know, add something else to your
you need more
busy
buttons.
Plate
I need
it.
More things to do.
More things to incorrectly press at the wrong time.
Hey, Raptor Show's got a soundboard.
They do,
and that thing's wild.
They do.
They must have like an entire Devlin section. It's all Devlin.
That's true. Yeah, check out the Raptor Show. Not only just read Prehistoric. It's one of my favorite Raptors podcasts out there. All right, we got a bunch of NBA news to break down here. Let's start with the sad news. This came out on Sunday. Memphis Grizzlies center Steven Adams will undergo season-ending surgery on the PCL in his right knee. The big man injured his knee in January, which kept him out for the rest of that season. And the team said he had to have this surgery after non-operative rehab failed to resolve ongoing instability. So this is another tough blow here for the Grizzlies, who are already going to miss Ja Morant for 25 games. Their guy that would have probably slotted into Steven Adams' position in Brandon Clark, he's going to miss the start of the season. So what do you think about Adams here, this unfortunate news, and how the Grizzlies will fare?
Get your Xavier Tillman Sr. stock, Skeets.
Yeah.
Seems like we're going to see a lot more of him, but this is a significant injury for the Grizzlies, enough that if we were doing our over-under podcasts, I would probably now go under 45.5 wins for Memphis. Last season, 28-14 with Big Steve on the court, 23-17 without, so a little bit better. But they're really going to miss just the physicality he brings. He's a great screen setter for Ja Morant whenever he returns. Would obviously be a great screen setter for Smart and Bane as well. He's killer on the offensive glass. And then on the defensive glass, he definitely helps rebounding, but he also keeps bodies off Jaren Jackson Jr., allows him to really roam and make an impact defensively. The foul trouble will be even more in question, I think, with JJJ this season, if he's going to be running a lot more center minutes out there. They're going to be playing, younger guys in Tillman, Santi Aldama, Zaire Williams will probably get a nice shot here. They've been drafting 3, 4, 5 positions for the past couple of seasons, so the guys are there, but they're skinnier or they're slower. There's not the perfect combination that they had between Jaren Jackson Jr. as the athletic shot-blocking type and then Steven Adams as the space-taker-up sort of big beefy center. So, yeah, this is a big-time miss for the Grizzlies. And I don't know. I mean, like we're saying, the under seems in play now, and the Grizzlies are a team that has been near the top of the Western Conference. They could very easily finish in the middle.
Yeah, what's really a bummer about this, too, is like he hurts it, I said, in January. You know, it's coming up to a year ago, really. And you get never wanting to like, well, let's just do surgery and get it over with. But it feels like that would have been maybe the smarter move here, unfortunately, right? But they tried to do the non-operative rehab, like I said, and it just failed, at least with his sort of stability and how good he felt on that knee. But man, yeah, if they had done it back then you sort of have him coming back probably at some point this season. But instead, Adams done for the season with that season-ending surgery. And yeah, I guess if you're playing fantasy basketball, look at Tillman. Aldama, I think, will get some opportunity alongside Jaren Jackson Jr. So maybe if you're going, if they're not taken up off the waiver wires yet, go grab those guys if you're playing fantasy hoops. Are you playing fantasy hoops still?
No.
No. I've been retired for a while, eh?
Only reality hoops for me.
Okay.
Ever since the fantasy unicorn went away, I haven't been in the mix. I've been searching for it in the fantasy forests out there trying to capture it. For a real basketball team, the Grizzlies, what do you think about them going after Rob Williams there in Portland?
Saw that. Of course, you always see, hey, Dwight Howard, here's your team to come play for as well. Yeah, I mean, sure. Yeah, because it's not like this is a couple months. This is the season here that he's out. And I know he's Steven Adams feels like he's 40, but he's not even 30. So he could come back from this injury, though. A giant dude with a knee injury, that's always tough. Yeah, so do you pivot and try and find sort of a five to play alongside Jaren Jackson Jr., who they obviously just don't want to play all that much at center.
Right.
And a part of it is foul trouble. I get that. But he also could. I mean, he's a big-ass dude, too. Like, I mean, he's like a 6'11 guy that leads the league in shot blocking.
Yes.
Like, he should, in theory, be able to play that position in today's game. Yeah, just I don't know what it would take to sort of to get him from the Portland Trail Blazers. I don't know.
Probably a pick or a pick and a swap or something like that, just because the Blazers would be holding the cards.
Yeah,
but the Grizzlies are a team that has some assets because they're usually pretty stingy with their draft picks because they like drafting. I think another possible solution for them would be Clint Capela if things don't go as anticipated in Atlanta here. The future at the big position for Atlanta is going to be Okongwu for sure, but Capela is a little bit more similar to Steven Adams than I think Rob Williams is to Steven Adams. Williams plays pretty similar to Jaren Jackson Jr., being able to roam and influence shots at the rim, whereas Capela is getting bodies on people. He's a great rebounder as well, which you need next to Jaren Jackson Jr.
The other potential center to sort of target, if it's possible at all, is bring Jonas Valanciunas back to Memphis.
Sure.
If you know, maybe if things go poorly for the Pelicans and they go a different direction, but probably unlikely. All right, our next piece of news, again, happened on Friday. Andre Iguodala, 4-time NBA champ with the Warriors, announced his retirement last week. It's official. In 19 seasons, Iguodala averaged 11.3 points, 4.9 rebounds, and 4.2 assists in over 1,200 games. And you see the accolades there. 4-time champ, won the 2015 Finals MVP, 1-time All-Star, and then 2-time All-Defensive selections. Any thoughts on this news, Iguodala here hanging it up?
He had a long career, 19 seasons in the NBA. Yeah. I think we're going to start seeing those kinds of numbers since guys come into the league more often and know how to take care of their bodies at this point. But Iguodala has been a fun guy to watch throughout his career. It was cool when he was playing with Allen Iverson. They had two AIs on the same team, and he looked like he was going to be the athletic scoring wing future there. He was a good scorer at the time, but he really found his calling kind of after going to Team USA, playing role player basketball, and then being like the epitome of a role player glue guy with the Warriors.
Yeah.
He made the death lineup possible for the most part and was such a smart player that as his athleticism declined later and later in his career, he was still able to contribute getting a better outside jump shot, being a passer, and just being knowing where to be defensively, having incredibly quick hands. He must have led the league in strip sacks? That's an NFL term. But low strips, you know, rather than straight up steals. So, yeah, you know, 19 seasons, not a surprise when somebody retires after that long, and definitely not a surprise that the guy wants to go on to own his own team. He's apparently now a venture capitalist.
Yeah. I think he has set himself up well here for his post-NBA career. Is Andre Iguodala a future Hall of Famer at all?
His teams will be in there.
Oh, you think the Warriors, the 73-9 Warriors will be inducted?
Or at least the Warriors, the mid-2000s Warriors, I think, will get in there. I don't know. And I never want to say somebody's not a Hall of Famer because they might find out on Instagram and start sliding in our DMs.
Shout out to The Rock.
But Andre Iguodala himself said he doesn't think he's a Hall of Famer on a podcast.
Yeah, Statitudes, it's a newsletter I love. They had the breakdown over the weekend about whether or not Andre Iguodala is a Hall of Famer. Justin, he goes through a bunch of questions for all of the people when he's assessing their Hall of Fame credentials. First one, was he ever regarded as the best player in basketball? No, for Andre Iguodala. Was he the best player on his team? Justin argues he was on the 76ers for a window there. 06-07 to maybe 2011-12. Those teams, they won about 46% of their games. They made the playoffs four times in the six seasons. They only won one playoff series. Trey Kirby remembers it well, unfortunately.
Yes, this I was watching it at 628 Fleet Street.
Yes, I was with you when Derrick Rose went down. That's right. That was the 1-8 matchup there, and they did beat the Roseless Bulls in that series. Did he have an impact on a number of NBA finals or conference finals? Absolutely, Iguodala did, specifically the finals MVP in 2015 when they beat the Cavs in six. Are most players who have comparable statistics in the Hall of Fame? This is the one that intrigued me. Iguodala is one of 21 players in NBA history to record at least 10,000 points, 5,000 boards, and 5,000 assists. Of those other 20 players, 15 are in the Hall of Fame. Four are still active, but will be elected. LeBron, Harden, Westbrook, and Chris Paul. And one is retired, but not yet eligible for the Hall. Joe Johnson. Also on that little sort of list there. Yeah. But Justin points out at Statitudes, Iguodala ranks 21st among those players in points, 20th in assists, and 15th in rebounds. So he's at the bottom of that group if you're picking those. And then the final one I'll go with here is, do the players' numbers meet Hall of Fame standards? If you look at his Hall of Fame probability, it's like 12.7%, which is pretty low. And only one All-Star selection? There are not many guys in the Hall of Fame with two or less. I think it's Ginobili. I want to say like Kelvin Murphy and Vlade are the only other ones with two or fewer. Yeah. So that's sort of tough too. But I guess he got a gold medal.
Yeah. Helps. He was a good Team USA player, and he's got multiple titles, which will be the case. You know, once Steph retires, Draymond and Clay, and they start getting into the Hall of Fame, maybe his Hall of Fame case kind of picks up steam at that point, where like he was an integral member of all of those teams.
Yeah, it's also wild to think. I think I saw this in Woj's article writing about the retirement. In July 2013, Iguodala turned down a 5-year contract with the Nuggets to join the Warriors via the sign-and-trade on a 4-year, $48 million contract. I mean, what a move for his career.
That was a controversial move.
I know.
Because hadn't the Warriors beat the Nuggets in the playoffs previously, and they thought Iguodala was like giving them state secrets from the Nuggets to the Warriors, and then he switched teams the next year?
That's right. But man, that turned out well for him, winning a bunch of championships on the Warriors.
Yeah.
I don't think that goes down there in Denver. All right. So I don't think he'll ultimately get in. Sounds like you don't as well, nor does Iguodala.
Yeah, exactly.
But you never know. You never know down the line. Contract extensions. Today, I believe, is the last day, right, for players on the last year of their first-round rookie-scale deals and extension-eligible veterans with 2 years left on their deals to get a contract extension. And we had a few come in here. I'm just going to throw them all at you, Trey. Tell me the ones you want to talk about. We had the Wizards, Denny Avdia, agreeing to a 4-year, $55 million extension. The Spurs and Zach Collins, they reached a 2-year, $35 million extension. And the Nuggets extended Zeke Nnaji on a 4-year, $32 million deal. What do you think? Any thoughts on...
Players are expensive these days, Skeets.
I know,
that's what
you see some people freaking out.
$32 million for Zeke Nnaji, and I bet that, like, we've got sickos that watch this show and listen to this show.
Yeah.
You may not have seen Zeke Nnaji play, and he's getting $32 million. But yeah, I guess let's start with Avdija, just because he's probably the most well-known of these players. 4 years, $55 million. Kind of a lot, but he's not even 23 years old yet. He will be quite soon. He's really good Defensively, yeah. He's got good size. He hits the glass. He can play a couple of different positions. The offense is definitely the question. Not much of a three-point shooter right now. Just kind of puts his head down, tries to get to the rim. So he draws some free throws, which is good. Decent passer as like the third ball handler on a team. But if he's going to be a real impact player, he's going to need to shoot closer to league average from three. I think he was like in the 30s, low 30s, 31.
Yeah.
At least he plays a lot, though. That's good. And, you know, there's a new Wizards front office. This is a new era for the Wizards. At least they're showing some faith in him that he'll stick around, at least for the onset of the rebuild.
That's right. And again, you see 4 years, $55 million. That is a lot of money, don't get me wrong. But not really in the NBA landscape when you, like, break it down per year. I saw Hollinger wondering maybe this is the type of contract that's, you know, higher in the first year, then sort of goes down year two and three, and then maybe actually comes back up in year four, sort of this horseshoe contract idea. There's a bunch of reasons why teams are trying to do that. I don't believe there's a team or player option on that one as well. And, yeah, he is young. I forget how young he is, and at least he gives a damn about defense. So that's not bad. Any other thoughts on the other ones?
I mean, I got thoughts on all of them.
All right,
really
give me
the
Zach Collins.
About Zach Collins? What a reclamation project by the Spurs. I think this is a good get for them. He gives them toughness at center. Mm-hmm. It keeps the bumps and bruises down for Victor Wembanyama, which I think is a huge part of it here.
Yep.
Lets him kind of roam around and make plays all over the court using his size. And Zach Collins, I think, is pretty decent when he's been healthy. He got hurt at the end of his tenure there with the Trailblazers, had to recover basically last season with the Spurs as well, or a couple of seasons back. And then last year, he played a decent amount of games. I think he almost got to 70 games and was pretty solid when he was playing. Who knows if he becomes like a serious impact player for the Spurs. I think he's got a chance to pop a little bit if they add some playmakers at the perimeter positions. But for now, 2 years, it's kind of a lot of money for Zach Collins.
That was
but
the one.
This is a cheap, cheap team. Like the Spurs don't have a lot of big money contracts right now. I guess the Vassell and Keldon Johnson extensions will be kicking in, but they've got money to play with. So if this will help keep Victor Wembanyama healthy, it's totally worth it.
And it's a 2 year deal, too. You're right. I mean, it pops around, you know, $18 million or so if when we're looking at the average, close to that. But yeah, this is not a four or anything like that. So that one. That makes sense in that regards. And yeah, he looked okay when he got back. And the guy got back. I mean, he had a couple ankle injuries.
Yep.
And is back to being an NBA player. And then the final one, Najee.
Zeke Najee. If he can shoot, he'll be a good – this will be a really good signing for the Nuggets. He was 40% from three his first couple of seasons and then under 30% last year. So they got to hope he's better than 26%. If he rebounds, he'll be able to stay on the court. And there's some opportunity with the Nuggets, with Jeff Green leaving, with Bruce Brown leaving. Basically, Denver has to retain their young guys right now because the starters are going to get more and more and more expensive as time goes on.
Let's hear your thoughts, guys, on the contract extensions for all three of those guys, Avdija, Collins, Najee, with the Wizards, Spurs, and Nuggets, respectively. Again, last day for a lot of those contract extensions. I guess a couple more could trickle in theory, at the very last minute, but we will see. We got to take one more break, but when we come back, tweet of the night. Don't go anywhere.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
People in the stream team saying this show has jumped the shark. That's a good joke.
That's a great joke. That's a great joke, you guys.
For
I love it.
Old people.
I love it.
It is NBA Jersey Day. I should note out for the podcast listeners, I'm rocking the throwback Raptors jersey, especially with Alex Wong coming on to talk about the improbable first season of the Raps. Our guy Trey Kirby's got the Sixers Ben Simmons. What was with this choice?
Nike gifted us these jerseys probably when they took over the NBA contract. I never wore it. I was like, I'm never going to want to wear a Ben Simmons jersey.
Right.
But I also knew if I held on to it for long enough, it would become a comedy jersey. And guess what, Skeets? That day is today on the fourth annual NBA Jersey Day.
Yes. It looks good.
I mean, it's a great jersey.
It is.
It's a just cool
Ben
jersey.
Simmons on Philly.
Yeah, but
funny.
Now it's a funny one, yeah.
And then the stream team really wanted to know about your jersey, JD. The digital camouflage Raptors, which is that a...
That's a DeRozan.
DeRozan, yeah.
DeRozan.
Does Trey have the Bargnani of this?
I got a Bargnani.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I wore this downstairs, and Rachel's like, what the hell? What is that, Minecraft edition?
Oh, yeah, true.
Because it is kind of blocky if you go in real
it's
close. But
really ugly, eh?
Very, very ugly. Very ugly. It was the only one left in the box when we... Remember they brought us out like a whole box of jerseys and Lee dove in head first and he was like grabbing all the cool stuff. And I was like, all right, I guess I'm a Raptors guy. I guess I'll take DeRozan. DeRozan, nothing wrong with DeRozan, but
no.
It's this camo, I guess, for Remembrance Day? Maybe
yeah,
Veterans
probably
Day?
Around there. Yeah, I believe that was the idea. Man, I mean, it's the opposite of camouflage. You're not blending in anyway.
Yeah,
can't
definitely
stop
not.
Looking at it, like,
you should see me in Minecraft, though. You can't see me at all. Well, stand in front of
the creepers
will
TV. Never get you.
That's exactly right. That's
cool. I actually, when Alex was on, he was wearing, I think, a Raptors G League jersey. So I kind of actually felt likely. There's that picture of us getting ready to go to All-Star in Toronto. Six of us, five of us wearing Raptors jackets, and Lee wearing a bright white Sixers jacket.
That's right. We're big Sixers fans here on
right.
Dunks and Slash the Starters. All right, let's get to Tweet of the Night.
Tweet of the Night. Wow.
Tweet of the Night, X of the Night, comes from Shayna Rubin over the weekend as we had our last couple of preseason games. And, well, we got this exchange here, a Wembanyama Chris Paul jersey exchange, and this photo from Shayna Rubin, we might need to enhance if possible, because look at Chris Paul on the tippy toes as he takes the jersey photo with Wembanyama, which is so great, so relatable, especially any photo I've ever taken with Trey Kirby. Anyway, I thought it was a great catch there from Shayna.
All right, I almost made him as tall as Victor Wembanyama.
Yes, so close.
There's also that picture of Wemby from the game against the Warriors this weekend where he's blocking Wiggins' jump shot.
Yeah,
that's crazy. Wiggins looks tiny to the point where I didn't even notice Chris Paul in the corner. And everybody's like, look at him. He looks like Kevin Hart out there.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, Wiggins, what, 6'7"?
Yeah.
Wembanyama
waist high,
blocking
probably.
The shot. It looks like his... His fingertips must be how high in the air? Like, where are they?
Yeah, great question. 12 feet in the air?
I was going to say, at least.
11 and a half?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I thought about 12 feet. And then you're right, Chris Paul looks like a toddler on the sidelines out there. Any photo of Wembanyama is incredible. And the stuff he's doing in his games is just as amazing. But I love the tippy toe there.
I got to see him next to Yao and Shaq. Because, like, that's a crazy picture. Yao standing next to Shaq, and you're like, what? Shaq is tiny now? So, I mean, he'll be shorter than Yao, obviously. And both of those guys...
They're quite bigger, too.
You could probably fit four Wembys into those two guys. But, we got to see. We just got to see how he stacks up against the other Giants that we've seen.
That's true. We got to line them all up.
Yep.
All right, well, let's call it. Thanks so much to our guest, Alex Wong. Go get his new book, Prehistoric. It comes out everywhere tomorrow. You can pre-order it today, of course, but you might as well just wait at this point and get it tomorrow. It's so, so good. And again, if you have a Raptors fan in your life, I would get this for them around the holidays. It's the perfect gift. It's so, so good. And he did such a great job of, going over the entire creation of this team. Actually, I meant to bring it up, but I'll bring it up with you.
Okay.
Of course, the book is about the Raptors, but he does slip in a part about the Vancouver Grizzlies and the naming contest they had for their team. Because a lot of Raptors fans, they know all about, oh, there was a bunch of other names in the mix for, and then Raptors wins out. But some of the names for the Vancouver Grizzlies, it was a province-wide naming contest. Vancouver Rain. Okay.
Sure.
Vancouver Ravens. Vancouver Orcas.
Oh.
Vancouver Dragons. I feel like Dragons was on everybody's shortlist at some point. Vancouver Storm. Vancouver Eagles. Vancouver Venom. Vancouver Vultures. Vancouver Vipers, and then the one that I guess they were thinking about going with, the Vancouver Vipers. But then somebody was like, that's the name of a Dodge car, and General Motors was involved in the team. So they're like, well, we can't do that.
Wait, what?
General Motors was
involved with the future Grizzlies.
Yes,
and
it was
they
the name
didn't
of
want
the,
their team name, their car named used.
No, Dodge.
Oh, Dodge.
Yeah. So it was like conflicting car brands.
Right. Okay.
Vipers, Vancouver Vipers. Anyway,
that's
any favorites
cool.
Out of those? I mean, some of those weren't bad.
I think the Storm is good.
Yeah,
I like Rain and Storm.
Well, Storm ultimately went to WNBA Seattle franchise. Yeah.
It would be very competitive with the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Oh, yeah. I mean, sure. Battle of weather.
The battle of weather.
Forget the Naismith Cup. Give us the Weather Cup. All right. So anyway, that's another little favorite part of that book. Okay, one more sleep until real NBA basketball is back. We'll be here in the Classic Factory tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. Eastern. I think we got to talk about some of these jerseys.
Yes.
We got to do some thumbs up or thumbs down on some of them at least. And whatever other NBA news and final predictions we want to get in, I might fire up a playback. Little pregame playback tomorrow night as we lead into the TNT games. I'm excited that we get the Nuggets at 7:30.
Yeah.
Does that sound weird? We get Lakers Nuggets at 7:30 on ring night, but that's, you know, early for the Denver Nuggets.
Yeah, that's a really early
as a
game.
As a home game.
That's like a 5:30 start.
Because the second game's Warriors Sun. So, yeah, I know. But I can't wait. Real basketball. It's back, guys. And that means no dunks. Back in your life. Monday through Friday. So we'll see you tomorrow morning. Until then, Clipper Bros.
You heard it here first. Have a great time. Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome.
Thanks for joining us. And remember, tomorrow is the beginning of the 77th NBA season. But today's just the fourth NBA jersey day. Gotta catch up.
Brace the day, people.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.